Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the theater arts and culture podcast for the Twin Cities and beyond. We're going way beyond across the pond today. It's just me in the hot seat, missing the kickoff of Georgia and Texas for the love of the game here. No spoilers. I'm going to record it and watch it after. And I'm waiting to see where the Gophers end up for the their bowl game. But in any case, Mari and Amanda are both indisposed this weekend. That's all right. We have a great guest today for you. You may have already listened to the reading of his play that we did here recently. If you haven't, this interview, this episode is going to be a great companion piece to it. I have Ross Howard with me, playwright Ross Howard, and we just did a recording of a reading of his play, The Making of She and I, and you can go and listen to that on the same feed where you're listening to this, whether it's on the website or on iTunes or on Spotify. Ross and I go way back. We're both playwrights. And we're going to talk here about theater and about the making of She and I. Ross, how are you? Welcome to Mouthing Off.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. And you're in the old country for people who are listening. For our Frogtown Radio listeners here in St. Paul, you are over in Britain.
I am, yeah. Live now in southeast, on the southeast coast in England, by Canterbury.
All right.
It's called Whitstable. We've had a storm today. Storm Dara, you might have heard. It's more on the other side of the country, but we're getting it a little bit here. So if you hear a lot of whooshing around me, that's what it is.
All right. So it's not some sort of Foley effect. It's actually real. What was Storm Dara? Is that what you're saying?
Dara. The Irish
era.
Yeah.
Is this, this is like a
double R A G H.
Dara. So it's like a kind of a famous wind. Is it like a regular storm that you get, or what's the storm?
Oh, well, we name our storms. Do you name your storms over there?
I mean, we give our hurricanes names.
We do it with storms.
I see. Okay.
Interesting. So there was Storm Bert a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Bert.
I missed the C one. I can't quite think of it. But we're on Dara now. We're on D.
I got you. Okay. So the next one will be, you know, Storm Egbert or something to that effect.
Exactly. Yeah.
Engelbert. You know, I've never been to Canterbury. Obviously, quite a destination for pilgrims and a big name in terms of the history of English letters.
Yeah.
You always think of Chaucer and Canterbury Tales.
That's the one, yeah.
What sort of, I guess, history do you have there? Are you from thereabouts, or how did you end up there?
Basically, me and my partner, we lived in London for a while, and for my birthday, this was 2017, I think. 2017, we just wanted to go to the seaside place. We picked Whitstable. We didn't know anything about Whitstable. And we went there, and within an hour, we said, we've got to move here.
Really?
And so exactly a year later, we moved here. So it was kind of the first place where I think both of us ever moved where, you know, it wasn't anything to do with prospects, job prospects or anything like that, but it was just about the place and how beautiful it was. And we've been here ever since. And it's, I've moved around a lot, but I could see myself here till my end.
Ah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, not for many years. It's fascinating. So you tell an American like me that you're in the Southeast and on the coast, and I immediately imagine the coast is facing south, but I just looked it up on a map. You're facing north. So the sea is to your north here in Whitstable.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. And then you're what? You must be 10 minutes north of Canterbury or 30 minutes north of Canterbury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is close. I play soccer in Canterbury on Tuesday night, so it's like 15 minutes, yeah.
All right.
Well, I'm a changed man now. I like swim, play soccer.
You're on your
it's a seaside life. It's what it does to you.
You're the English Mishima.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, you're in touch with the sun and the sea, the salt and the sand.
I am. I'm very zen.
Very zen now. Okay, yeah. That's great. What about what position do you play in soccer, football?
I'm the kind of guy that makes the things happen. So like a number 10. You
know, okay,
it's eight a side. I used to play a lot when I was up to about 16.
All right,
and then and then sort of a couple of years ago, I was just like, I really want to do that. I've probably only got about 5 years. I'm 46 now, so I've got about 6 years where I can do it safely.
Right. It is a very physical sport, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to keep those Achilles tendons and.
Yep.
So yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I've done boasting. I'm sort of like a striker. I have no pace, but I can pick a pass, as they say.
I see. All right. Very fun. Yeah, I played a lot of it too as a kid. I don't have the stamina for it. You know what I did? And we will talk about the making of She and I and Ross's playwriting career. But you know what I did yesterday for the first time, Ross? I went with some buddies of mine and did trap shooting for the first time, clay pigeons.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, have you ever done that?
I've watched people do it.
Right. I wasn't raised with guns. But I have this shotgun, bought it a few years ago. It's just sitting here. My friend's been sort of, you know, giving me a hard time going, you got to go and shoot that thing. And so I, you know, bust it out and we go down to the club here. And the way trap shooting works is I'm sure there are variations, but we shot two boxes. So rounds of 25, and it's that exact thing where you wait for your turn, load your gun and say pull, and then you shoot. I got 13 of 25 the second time. I was proud of that. Apparently it was respectable. And it's what, you know, it's one of those masculine things where in your mind, you know, you imagine, you know, I bet I'd be pretty good at that. And then of course you get there and you're terrible. So I was happy to, it was a lot of fun. There's something very satisfying about pulling the trigger and watching the clay explode there in the sky. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched my uncle. He had a farm in Wales. He tried to show us. I think he was trying to get my dad into it. This was ages ago, and it looked good. I'd be up for joining you on that at some point.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you come to Minnesota sometime. We'll take you. Yeah. Do you? Now I don't want to get this wrong because I called you English earlier, but are you Welsh as well, or your family? It sounds like.
I'm from Northwest England. So
okay.
I'm English.
I've been, you know, in all my time spent over in London, I've become very sensitive about like Welsh erasure. Do you know? Like, I try to be diplomatic, sensitive to that. So, because you never know. Yeah. No, I was just going to say where specifically, because we'll get into your origin story. You know, usually I save for further in the episode. But, you know, so where were you, you know, where did your theater origin come from? And then I guess, did that happen in your hometown? You know, the lure of the bright lights and everything. How did you start?
I'm from a northwest town called Wigan, between Manchester and Liverpool. Road to Wigan Pier. It's famous for pies. Trying to think what else is
famous for pies. And when you say pies, you mean like meat pies? You mean savory pies? Okay, right.
Yeah,
we
well,
have to
they're
be
not
clear
they're,
for.
Mm. Yeah, this has been meat pies. They're not. They're not particularly sophisticated. I think pies have become a. They're your basic meat and potato pie, and that tends to be the diet of a lot of I mean, they probably won't hear this, but yeah, it's famous as a town for pie eaters. That's what
I love it. If you look up Wigan pies on Google, the first thing that shows up, it's manchestersfinest.com. We embarked on the Great Wigan Pie Trail.
Yeah. No, that
Wonderful.
sounds, yeah. But people are happy there,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What do
Yeah.
you call people from Wigan? What is the word for that?
It'd just be a Wiganer, I think.
Wiganer. Okay, gotcha. Wiganer. Gotcha. And did you?
Sorry.
Not at all. Go.
Oh no, but then I lived mainly in a neighboring town from about 5 years old, place called Bolton. Have you heard of Bolton?
Yeah, I've heard of Bolton.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on what Bolton would be known for internationally. Reebok, the brand, started there.
Oh, is that right? That's
Yeah.
something. That's not nothing. Fascinating. And is that where your theater career began? How did it start?
Pretty late, actually. I didn't really go to the theater as a kid. But when I went to university, I did a history and English and American literature. That was my major. And got into the habit. Had a friend who was doing a drama degree, and I would sort of go with her to shows around Manchester. They have a good theatre there called the Royal Exchange Theatre. That's if you've heard of the Bruntwood Playwriting Prize, that comes from
Sure.
the Royal Exchange and the Library Theatre. And I would just tag along with her, and gradually over the year or the couple of years there, I kind of just became like a theatre fan, really. I wrote randomly. I around the time of the university, of being at university, I wrote kind of poem sounds a bit grand. I wrote rhymes. I wrote sort of duologues, comedy sketches, things like that.
Sure.
But then the plays that we saw, and particularly the American plays, there's also a good theatre there called the Library Theatre, and they did. So, for example, I saw some of the first plays I saw were Angels in America,
Sure,
Glass
great play.
Menagerie, Death of a Salesman,
Yep.
and that sort of just pulled me in, and and so I guess that was my early theatre education. I was like 20, 21 when I first started
Yeah.
going to theatre.
Well, and then you know an awful lot about America. You've lived over here. I think you got your MFA this side of the pond, right?
That's right, yeah. So, about a year before I graduated, and in this theatre phase I was having, I went to an acting school in Dublin for 2 weeks over the summer. And it was mainly, it was me and another guy who coincidentally was from Canterbury, and the rest of the students or actors were Americans. And over the course of the 2 weeks, they told me about what it was like there. Typically, they were all still doing in theatre majors and things like that. And I'll try and get to this as quick as I can.
No, this is the point. The point is to do an hour. So take your time. It's just the two of us. So,
As I said, I was writing, and I think over the course of the 2 weeks, I showed them my writing, and they sort of told me about 10-minute plays, and that they could do with people, any writing that if I ever felt like writing a play or a short play, they would they'd be happy to do it. And so I started in that last year of university, I started writing short plays or plays, and they got produced there. So my first, it's funny, my first two plays that were ever produced was on a bill of plays at the University of Connecticut, and I was they had two of mine on there with a play by Anthony Minghella, one from Harold Pinter and one from Alan Ayckbourn.
All right.
So
Wow.
and so I sort of was like, well, when I graduate, I'm just going to go to America. I'm going to go for 90 days, and I'll visit people. And I just kind of felt just going there, something would happen. I ended up in Fresno and met a British student there in a bar, and he told me, and I must have told him that I was a writer that I was kind of interested in. Perhaps just working in America. I hadn't really heard of sort of I hadn't really considered graduate school in any way. Anyway, he introduced me to a playwright at the Fresno State. His name was Edward Emmanuel. He read my writing and he was like, "You need to. Have you ever thought about graduate school?" And I didn't really have any money. I couldn't sort of entertain that idea. And he was like, "Well, no, people will pay you to go to graduate school here."
The only way to get an MFA is if somebody's going to pay you. That's what I say.
And I was, a degree in history and English and American literature. My diary was pretty free. And so, I think the plan was he was like, you want to, so come over to Fresno State, do a bit of postgraduate work, do a few classes, but write plays and we'll put them on and we'll apply for grad school. And so, 2002, I went there. We did put some plays on. That was the first plays I saw of mine. And then he was always talking about UNLV. And yeah, to just finish the story, I applied and got in. And yeah, and so 2003 it was when I started at UNLV and I did my 3 years there.
So from Northwest England to Las Vegas, Nevada, was there, my brother lives there. So I've been there a number of times and sort of beyond the mere tourist thing. What was your first impression of Las Vegas?
Oh man. Well, I was prepared for the weather a little bit because of Fresno. Fresno was hot, but I just remember it. Well, it was surreal. It was just a crazy, where I came from, like Manchester and Wigan, and it's so grey and. And it's just the heat was unreal. The fact that you just live in a desert is odd.
It is, isn't it?
I just sort of went with the flow of it. I don't remember. I don't kind of remember thinking too much about it. I just was like, I felt kind of along for the ride a little bit. And it was as much about, just doing something after university and traveling. For me, it was kind of like, obviously, I was into writing, I was into theatre, and I think that there is a debate about whether you should go to graduate school, and for me, because I was fairly uneducated in theatre, that discipline, that someone pushing you to write, and it was a good program. They produced you a lot. It wasn't just sitting in a classroom talking about plays and play theory. It was kind of right to for production. And I think it, and I think and to, I we might get onto this, but I think it sort of, you had the whole theatre department as an ensemble, so you got into writing for people, and I think that's sort of been my approach to writing that I've kept all throughout, that I write for people or with people in mind, or that it's not, I'm not necessarily sort of like write a play and just submit it and wait for something to happen. I tend to kind of expect it to be produced reasonably soon after I've written it, which is obviously odd.
It doesn't always work out that way, does it? I've been more and more leaning that way since we started our little theater company out here, and it does sort of change the way you write when you're very specifically thinking of certain people. And you can always imagine you're writing for celebrities too, as part of the process. I know people will do that. There's nothing wrong with that. That sounds fascinating. Do you stay in touch with that program, Ross? Do they still have an MFA where they will fund people? And did you do some teaching down there as part of it? What was that all like?
I did do some. Well, the teaching was a huge thing, actually, because I am not a public speaker, and certainly wasn't then. And is and There was a bit of a delay in getting my visa. There was a basically I arrived on the Sunday night and I had to teach this class first thing Monday morning.
Oh
And
my
I had
gosh.
never and so yeah, I got in on the
What was
Sunday night.
the class? What did you have
It
to
was like an
teach?
intro to theatre class.
Wow.
So
Sure, for
literally
undergrads. Yeah.
well, it was for non-majors. And
Okay.
but the
Wow.
idea and so yeah, I got to the office there like a sort of 8:30 the following, pretty jet lagged, and they just handed me this book, which was like an introduction to theatre, but and they were like, yeah, your class is at 9.
Sure. Hi,
And I
I'm the resident Englishman now. I'm going to
just walked
teach
into the
you.
room, and there was like 45 people there, like
Wow.
45 kids staring at me.
And I'm imagining, and UNLV, that's a good school. My brother, again, lives out there. He lives out in Henderson, but it's a state school, and you're in Las Vegas, Nevada. These are the children of locals out in Las Vegas. I'm imagining it was a bit of a motley collection of young people. Yeah.
People of all kind, young people,
Sure.
but also slightly older people who did particular jobs that you might imagine in Las Vegas.
Right. Dancers, blackjack dealers. Yep. Cool. Wow, what a story. That in and of itself is
But I did
dramatic.
get a lot of I think being British, I think I got a lot of goodwill. And
Yeah.
being slightly frazzled British guy,
Rumpled British, young British man
they seem
shows
to
up.
quite they were quite good to me, and then I loved it, I loved
Sure. Well, and
I was
you
really into it.
obviously came with some ta you were clearly talented, enough for people to kind of maneuver you into that position, but that is very funny. Yeah. Americans can never be rumpled the way the British can. You all pull that off, Yeah. We Yeah, fun.
It can work for
Yeah.
you.
Well,
And
yeah, it's different styles, It's yeah. It Americans can't pull off Tweety. Not really. We can't be Tweety. Yeah. So what, you did 3 years there in
did
Las
3 years
Vegas?
there, and then I actually went back to Fresno State and taught as an adjunct for 2 years. And that was when I wrote probably my first decent play, that's been done probably the most, Arthur and Esther, a play called Arthur and Esther. That was yeah, and that yeah that was good. I mean, I loved teaching, and I loved I did like that life, and I got a lot right. It was a lot of, but I was on my own a lot, in that 2 years. I was kind of, but I needed it after 3 years in Las Vegas. I that was something, that 3 years. And and got to do the sort of a few playwriting conferences. Had a few shows. I had a show in Minneapolis, actually,
Oh,
about the
yeah.
Fringe Festival. Went to New
Great.
York.
We've got a great Fringe Festival here. Yeah.
Yeah, I was only there for my mate directed a play of mine called Who We Found Instead. And I was only in there. I came for like 48 hours, but I remember like in the Pillsbury House Theatre. That's where it was. And then I sort of decided, sort of around spring 2008, to come back to England. I don't sort of. I think I just, six odd years, 7 years, 6.5 years, 7 years in America. I was, and of course, with your visa, I don't know, if you have a visa, it's sort of attached to the institution that you're at. So if you don't see yourself in that, it isn't that you can just up and move to another place, or and it's funny because I got got an Edward Albee fellowship about that summer that I was leaving, and I got to meet Edward Albee like quite a lot during that time, and he was always and he was like, you need to go back to England, he was like, it's better for theatre, but I had already made a decision to go back anyway, and it wasn't necessarily for theatre reasons. So that was that, and then But did keep in touch with people, and then sort of we're in 2024, about 10, 12 years ago. You make a lot of friends and contacts in grad school and things like that. And director, a friend of mine who was at UNLV, Sarah Norris, she was in New York. She set up a company called the New Light Theatre Project, and I started working with them for a few years and had plays in New York, and so yeah, I kind of have a, I'd say it's about 50-50, but with work produced here and produced there over in America, so
Here's a
yeah.
question. All the people that I've spoken to on this show so far, you're the one who probably has I guess the deepest connections on both sides of the place. You've got the US and not just New York either, which is very interesting. You'll find playwrights who are like, yeah, I know New York and I know London, right? That's
Right.
fairly common, but you know, Fresno and Las Vegas and then of course New York too. What's the major difference between the two countries and how we approach theater in 90 seconds? Actually, take as much time as you want with the question. Really.
The one big thing I think, and it's due to the size of the countries, is I kind of feel that American theatre practitioners perhaps realize that the odds that they're going to end up on Broadway or at the Lincoln Center might not happen. So they're a lot more entrepreneurial about setting up theatre companies, doing it themselves. I feel like here in London, because you're always like 2 degrees of separation away from doing something with the BBC, getting a role at the Royal Court. Working with the National, there doesn't seem to me the same type of willingness to kind of perhaps do what you've done with Badmouth. That it's sort of that London's great for theatre, no doubt, but it's a bit like what I would imagine Hollywood is like. London, I think London theatre is a bit, and so the conversations you tend to have in London about your plays is sort of like, okay, we'd all like to do this play. How can we find the money to go and do this play? And there's a sort of reluctance to perhaps set up a company and put in that early grunt work, which might look after you all work-wise for, 10 years.
Sure.
That's the major
Right.
difference, I think.
Yeah, and I don't mean this in a punitive way for either the US or for the UK, but the way you describe that is almost like a microcosm for the major differences between the two countries and even the sort of the old world and the American style of go do it yourself, in America. I mean, we have the big regional theater archipelago, and there are big institutions, but yeah, at a certain point here, there's just probably a little more hustle, I think, because it's just baked in to kind of how we are.
I
And,
find
in
them.
London, yeah, go.
There's actually a great book by Todd, I think it's Todd London,
Oh, sure.
talking about all the theatre companies or some of the best theatre companies in America. It's very, it's it. You have a great tradition there. I think what's also what I was always moved by a little bit, or moved by might not be the right. I do think theatre going is perhaps more in our culture.
Oh, yeah.
And I always found it quite touching, the philanthropy towards the arts in America, or the kind of effort in the wake of sort of like against the headwinds of like, the culture doesn't support this, so we've got to do it ourselves. I found that kind of more move. Here it is kind of in curriculums. It has been historically well funded by the Arts Council and things like that. And I think, yeah, I'm just repeating myself, I guess. But the entrepreneurial can do, or will try and do, or we will do this. That's why I like working in America, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll say too, as an American with some connections over there, and I have to say my play Moderation is going to be on in London at the Hope Theatre in March. You can go to moderationplay.com for tickets and details there. And also my other podcast, Art of Darkness, I've yet to announce this. This is kind of on the DL, but we're going to be doing an Art of Darkness live episode in London. I'm not going to name the venue, but it's going to be near the Hope, and that's going to happen on March 24th. So I know Ross, probably some of your people will listen to this over there. So check out moderationplay.com, and tickets are already on sale. I will say, as an American, who's had a chance to work over there, it has an appeal too, knowing that there's all of this institutional and even state support. It can feel like kind of wandering in from a desert sometimes. So you have to strike a balance between, drilling for, drilling your own well here in the United States, or sort of going to, the source itself, which, your culture is more theater first than ours is. Like, Americans tend to think in film first, film and television first. And over here, theater is just kind of the redheaded stepchild of the arts in this country. And theater kid has even become a pejorative
Right.
on Twitter, and probably rightly so. I mean, you sort of none of this stuff is just comes out of nowhere. So well, Ross, let's pivot. Yeah,
I
go.
think no, well, and also there's I think there's a case of grass is greener on the other side,
Oh,
and
absolutely.
just the novelty of having like a foreign audience respond to your work, and just really a good excuse to go to places you might not otherwise go to. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very satisfying, and you'll get. I know you've had a play produced here before, but I think you'll get a kick, obviously, about going into London and seeing your play. I think that's a great feeling.
Yeah, it's fun. It's there is a just that sort of sense of the exotic and the different. And even though we share a language, our cultures are wildly different. And
Right.
of course, for playwrights, that's always titillating, because what are we first? We're sort of observers of the social scene. We're observers of human character and human nature. And that is, I think, a smooth segue into your play, The Making of She and I, which we just recently recorded. It's on this stream. If you're listening to Mouthing Off, which you are, you can go find The Making of She and I on iTunes, Spotify, or just go to badmouthtc.com. It's right there. And this is a newish play that Ross wrote. And Ross, it's a four-hander, so it's four actors, two and two, two British women over there in oh gosh, what's the name of the city?
Well, they're from Cambridge, but it's
Cambridge, right?
Linton's a village in Cambridge, yeah.
Linton, that's what it is. Linton. So you're in Linton in the UK, and then there are two women in Linton in the United States, and the two Americans are podcasters who are like sort of like right-wing lady podcasters who are doing oh gosh, what's the word? So for men, it's called MGTOW, med going their own way. They're sort of doing the female equivalent of that, where they're talking about female mating strategy and how to secure the most valuable mate and all of this. And I guess what I'm saying is, having worked on that play, it's very, very clear that you've spent time in the United States. You've spent time at, obviously in the UK, because of the way the voices of those characters come across. When you set out to write this play, did you explicitly say, I'm going to do a play where I'm going to double, two Americans with two Brits, or did it just sort of happen naturally?
Going back to what I said, it was written for two American actors and two British actors. Yeah, but there was—I mean—the initial germ of the idea was these two British sisters, and the general thing. I wrote, the idea in sort of Christmas 2016, and the germ of it really was just, something along the lines of the power of foreign ideas upsetting a domestic environment. That was the kind of, that was the, what's that word? Prompt. Yeah. And then that led on to and then where do you get those ideas from? And I've always I mentioned this last week when we were doing the reading. You know, I've listened to podcasts from really early on, like 2007, 2008, and they don't really have to be particularly well produced podcasts. I tend to use, Apple Podcasts a bit like a Google search. Sometimes I'll just type something in I'm sort of interested in. And I'll listen like to two guys in a basement just talking about 80s NFL or something. You know what I mean? So I've just been very familiar with that sort of platform, people getting together, just talking. And obviously, I know there's very well produced ones like This American Life. That was like a very that was like one of, that was like an old one I used to listen to. I don't know whether it's still going that, but and so I sort of went down this rabbit hole of podcasts, listened to I think dating podcasts. Oh, really, for a playwright, they're worth listening to. Because they get into all areas around things like people's upbringing, psychology, psychological traits. And when you're sort of dealing with ideologies, I mean, the idea of picking a partner, by its nature is quite a discriminatory, selective process. And so it seemed like a good medium to then. And what I notice about particularly what people regard as sort of like now extreme certain podcasts they view with suspicion. They did all and people like Andrew Tate. I don't know whether you know him.
Oh yeah, we know all about
A lot of these
what
notorious,
the yeah.
a lot of these notorious
The top
people of,
G.
yeah, all these figures. It kind of I think they all start out as a kind of well, we're going to help you get a girlfriend, or we're going to help you get a man. And then sort of around 2014, 15, they all started a lot of these started expanding their views on other areas in society, And so yeah, I just went with all that really, we recorded the product last week.
Yeah, and I would encourage everybody to listen to the end of this episode and then go listen to The Making of She and I by Ross Howard, which we recorded, and the cast was fantastic. I think it was really great. And of course, Amanda and Mari were played the Americans with a podcast, which is sort of a typecast again moment. I really love, because I listened back to it, that it's unclear right away what she's listening to, and the sister thinks that she's picking up all of these ideas from a man. And then of course, as the play unfolds, I don't think I'm giving anything away here. We realize she's developing a personality based on a podcast, which that's fraught with problems. I would strongly encourage everybody to avoid doing that, right? I say, as someone with two podcasts, but we know what that feeling is like, and it's sort of makes me think of like when you were a kid, right? You're a child, you go see a movie and it's a kung fu movie, and then the next day you're doing kung fu with your friends, right? You're emulating the thing that you see on media. Well, these long form podcasts you can listen to for 200 hours, 1,000 hours. And I can see the risk of, as you say, these foreign ideas infecting a domestic situation and people speaking in generalities. And if you embrace and adopt them, they may not fit into your milieu, like your life, where you are in your life. Did you do much explicit research for this play, or were you already sort of immersed in, like you say, you were already immersed in the in podcasts?
I knew the I knew the formula, or formula's not the right word. I sort of I think the idea was, it wasn't just podcasts. It was more the type of podcast that sort of posts every day. Not necessarily the ones that, and you see the you, I'm trying not to name people or call people out there. But yeah, it's the kind of people who just it's like the podcaster's pulpit, as pulpit. They've obviously they're gaming the algorithm, They're like post all the time, put up everything all the time. They just turn the mic on and just start talking. And it's such an intimate form, the podcast. I think it differs even from radio. Radio tends to be, news on the hour, traffic updates, a bit of music. It's but these people will just talk and talk and talk, for hours. And it must have a kind of I don't want to say brainwashing, but if these and I have I listen to people talk about football games that I've already watched. I tune into and I listen to particular NFL podcasts. Listen to people talk about something I've just basically watched the day before with them. I don't need to really, they're not telling me that, but you just like you become like, oh, I like hearing these guys chat about football,
You start to develop a
So,
parasocial relationship. They feel like your
yeah.
friends. They're your friends in the computer, right? They don't know
Yeah, I
you
know.
exist.
But I did listen to some crazy stuff. And the podcast in the play is called the Bottom Line Podcast. And that was an amalgamation of a couple of books I read from people, and it was like a cocktail of certain podcasts that had certain styles and traits, and but I wasn't focused necessarily. I felt that it was just as important to that the reactions to this podcast and the play were as important as what was actually said in the podcast. I didn't feel I needed to push that hard on what on some of the elements in the play or some of the moments in the play where you hear what they're saying. I don't think it's that bad what they say. But it sort of hints that there are other, that it gets a lot worse on that show than what we might hear. So yeah, it was kind of done with a light touch. I think it's sort of leaving to the imagination what else is said on that podcast that we don't get to
Sure,
hear.
sure. You sort of have to walk the line of how offensive do you want to be in your play? And yeah, they're definitely just, it's very cynical, this type of advice. It's very much, it's the kind of thing that Andrew Tate would give, but for women. Andrew Tate is, we'll just come down and Tate or not, let's just put him aside, right? But the advice that these dating people will make, it's totally Machiavellian. It's all about guile and how to win to find the love of your life, right? It's all very cynical and calculated and very, I think, American. It's a sort of turning everything into a game, like this like hyper capitalist game where we're rating people. Well, he's a 10 and you're an 8, so how are we gonna, do you know what I mean? And just like reducing people to almost like a butcher shop, deli meat
Oh,
kind
it's
of
ridiculous,
lineup.
yeah.
Yeah, it really is ridiculous. And yet you can sort of sympathetically see why people are, why this appeals to people, because people increasingly feel alienated and powerless, and sort of the system writ large kind of does this to us anyway. So I think people go. People have a bit of Stockholm system to sorry, Stockholm syndrome to the system. How's that for a warm up? And so they just sort of adopt the practices of the sort of most cynical marketer that you could imagine, and apply that to the dating market. We even call it the dating market. And so it's extremely anti-romantic. It's not romantic at all. It's very calculated. And I think that comes across in your play. Well, Ross, we've got about 10 minutes left here. Where can people find you online? You have plays in print, plays that people can purchase, and you've been, published here and there. So what's a good place for people to find you?
Yeah, I you can find my plays, my books and plays on my website, rhplaywright.com. I'm not really last few years I haven't really I'm not I, I've really sort of I don't use social media that much. So my website is the better. I've joined Blue Sky. Have you joined Blue Sky yet?
I haven't joined Blue Sky, no. Should I?
Well, I've just joined. It's got nothing to do with my playwright. I've joined it sort of just to follow sports, really. And it seems all right. It seems it had a bit of it was buzzing about 2 weeks ago, and I think and then I think it sort of the enthusiasm the enthusiasm for it has waned a little bit. I was curious whether you had joined though. It's
No,
cleaner.
I'm.
It's a lot cleaner. It's a lot like
Yeah.
it's more. It's it, you know there's less.
Noise.
You know, you only see what you follow. Let's put it that way.
Ah, I see. I see. That's probably the reason it doesn't work because, or it's not going to work because it doesn't have the hate factor. You need a certain amount of friction. Well, we'll see. It remains to be
Couldn't do
seen.
it.
It's
I
good.
just couldn't do X anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's a lot. It
It's
really is a
yeah.
lot. Oh gosh, I had a thought. So you're in a
But
you're an
my
American
website,
football.
yeah, so.
Yeah, and it's rhplaywright.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Go there, folks. Buy a script and listen to the making of She and I. I also want to ask you, Russ, because you brought this up a few times. You're an American football guy. Who's your team?
So I would say I'm Steelers,
All right.
but I'm not like I'm more like the I'm more into the history of it. So
Yeah.
I do have a bit more of a connection with the Steelers. I end up. I got a commission a couple of years ago to write about Mike Webster, the Hall of Fame center for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'd say Steelers are my team, but the time zone thing, I tend to go with what the best. I tend to just watch the best matchups every week, and I did have a bit of a Vikings. I thought the Case Keenum season.
It's been a few years, but yeah.
It was when they had Diggs and
Oh yeah, the Diggs moment was great.
it was that season. Phelan and blanking on the running back's name. It'll come to me.
That wasn't it was after Peterson, right?
There tends to be a couple of teams I just kind of sort of root for by the season, but I'd quite like to see the Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl, for example.
Absolutely. What I
But
looked at it was
yeah,
Dalvin Cook replaced
that's the one.
Peterson. Yeah,
That's
right.
the one.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, listen, your Steelers are 9-3, you know.
Yeah, it's looking good this year.
So listen, and the Vikings, NFC North is the division to beat, 10-2. I'm taking my priest on Monday. Shout out to Father Mark. Father Mark and I are going to Monday Night Football. So if you watch a replay of Monday Night
Oh
Football
wow.
and you see a guy with a collar, Ross,
Yeah.
that's my spiritual advisor.
I'd love to go to a game over
Well, you got to come to Minnesota sometime. Listen, and I know you're
Oh,
not a
I would be
college
all over it.
football guy. You're not a college football guy, but I tell you what, college football, college ball, that's the way to go. It's so much fun, man. I
Oh,
love
like
it.
I'm aware I could easily be. It's just it is it's such an antisocial thing to follow. From the UK, it's 3 hours a
Is it?
game. It's
Yeah.
6. It's for 6 o'clock on a Sunday evening.
Right.
I've
Yeah,
been
it's
known
3 hours and it's, it's 70 minutes of ads.
Oh, and I yeah, and I watch. I'll watch two, the 6 o'clock and the 9:30. Which oh, what time does that make it? That your noon and your
The
four
noon
thirty
games.
ish.
Yeah.
I'll watch those every and then I'll watch the Sunday night game Monday morning. And then if I've got the energy, then I'll watch the Monday night football on the Tuesday. So I'm pretty hardcore. Yeah, I've got the Game
Yeah,
Pass.
nice. All right.
I'm
All
a
right. Cool.
big fantasy league player.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Listen, I grew up
Yeah.
watching football with my great uncle who did quality assurance for Bobcat, the little
Wow.
tractor trailer, little move soil around thing. And he was a union guy. He had a sixth grade education, and we watched every single game on Sunday for years. And he was betting on it with his union brothers. They had a pool, so we would every game, you know, would count. We were waiting to see who would win because he would do a pool every weekend. So much fun. Just a huge part of my childhood. Yeah.
I think I honestly I think it's America at its best. NFL. Just the football thing. I think it's great. It's you just see. It's a real civic boon, you know, football there, and I dig it. I like watching happy Americans united.
So do I, and we need more of that. I tell you what, I like watching. Hey, listen, I like your I like the Premiership too, the Premier League. I'm going to try to go to a match when I'm over there, but I have not followed it very closely. But the spectacle of it, I love sports. Sports is drama. Drama is sports. Ross, so we're coming into the home stretch here. I want to thank you for joining us. Thanks for sharing your play, by the way.
Oh
I'm so
no,
glad you reached out.
no. It's, as I say, I think when I first contacted you, I'd heard your play. I heard Mari's play, and I think you're doing a great thing with that. With the company,
Oh, thanks.
and if anyone doesn't listen, your Art of Darkness podcast is fantastic.
I really appreciate that. I'm very excited. We have a big change with Art of Darkness this year because Brad, of course, is leaving and Abby is coming on to be the co-host. But people have, you know, and obviously I'm sad to see Brad go, but at the same time, 4 years is a long time to do that with anybody. And I'm excited for the change to see what Abby brings to it. She's done a couple of episodes with us and you know, she's a lady. She's from New Zealand. She lives in London. She's a filmmaker. So I think she's going to bring a different sensibility. And as long as we can sort of keep the core Art of Darkness thing together, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And
No, Abby's great. That'll be yeah. I listened to your the preview, the season preview a
season
week
preview.
ago. Yeah, I'm kind of into some of the names that you add up on there, and
Well, and we're going to throw another one in because the live event that we're going to do in London, which is going to be on probably going to be on March 24th, so just stay tuned. That's a Monday, but we're going to be doing Goya, Francisco Goya. So that's
Oh
going to
yeah.
be you know, and the live shows we really only go for 60, 75 minutes. We don't go for 4 hours when we do the live shows. But Ross, you know, there's an open door too if you want to come on Mouthing Off or not on Mouthing Off. You're on Mouthing Off right now. If you want to come on Art of Darkness anytime, you could come
Yeah.
on. We could talk about Tennessee Williams. At some point, you know what? I have to do Edward Albee, and
Yeah.
you could maybe come on and we could talk about Albee's work. In any case, that's an open invitation. I really appreciate that. Everybody go and listen to Art of Darkness. It's at artofdarkpod.com. And then one more time, I will be over in England in March for Moderation, my play that we're going to do at The Hope in Islington. That's going to be in March. And tickets are already on sale. The link to go to is moderationplay.com. One more time, go to Ross's website, rhplaywright.com. Ross, are you working on anything right now? Any new plays coming down the pike?
I do have two good, solid ideas.
Okay. Well, when you have drafts of them, will you send them to us, please?
I will. They're not American.
I would still like
That's
to read them. I
okay.
can't. And if you ever write anything for Americans, keep us in mind, Ross.
I surely will.
Okay. All right, my man. Well, hey, watch that Monday Night Football. And if you see a man, you know, in black with a collar, you know, that might
You're
be
gonna have to
my.
wear something. You're gonna have to wear something distinctive.
I'm gonna be in a jersey, you know, like everybody else.
I will look out for you.
I've never been to a Vikings game, so I'm really excited. I'll be in a Justin Jefferson number 18. So
Oh
keep an
nice.
eye out.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll stick out wearing a Justin Jefferson Vikings jersey.
Yeah, right. I'll be a middle-aged white man in a Justin Jefferson jersey. You won't be able to miss me. All right, thanks, Ross.